These days, it's all about the little guy. Farmer, worker, populism is a thread in both political parties. When it comes to political ideas in America, are we on the road to oblivion with all of this populism? We'll talk about it in podcast 888, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, I am going to be talking about politics in this podcast, and usually this is when I tell you where to find the podcast, and thanks for sharing my stuff on Facebook and everything else. I'm just going to really quickly say I'm going to be heading down to Iowa to cover some caucuses down there. I don't know how it's going to go. Usually what I do is I just look up a bunch of events online, and then I head to Waterloo, or I head to Council Bluffs, or I head to Fairfield or something to cover some events. And that's what I'm going to do. And I, hopefully, and I believe personally that this is great political coverage, because most of these reporters and journalists and so forth are on the campaign trail with a particular candidate, or they are looking for the lurid story. They're not actually going down there and going to these events and observing what's going on and talking to people. And I take you inside the events in my podcasts. It's a lot of work. It is a lot of time hunched over the controls in mobile podcast command, sleeping in sleeping bags, letting the truck run at the truck stops because it's winter and so on. And so I do appreciate your contributions for mobile podcast command at thebobdavispodcast.com. You're going to be hearing a lot more of that when I get out on the road. And I'm probably going to do it second or third week of January, head down. The caucus is February 3rd. And then the question is whether I'm going to head down to Texas to the border or not. So we'll see. I don't know. But I wanted to get everybody aware of that. And I do appreciate the contributions that people make at thebobdavispodcast.com. Just look for the picture of Mobile Podcast Man. Click on the big oval yellow button, and it takes you to PayPal, and you can make a contribution. Those things really come in handy. I mean, they are the difference sometimes between me eating and not eating on the road. And I do spend my own money as well. I put a fair amount of money in my bank account from my other accounts to finance this. So this isn't something that I'm doing exclusively with people's finance. It's the sponsors of the podcast and you guys, the subscribers, who are helping me do it. And I'll talk more about it as we get closer and closer. And as long as we're talking about payment processors, you know, there's a button on my site that if you wanted to give me a check, you could do that by using the ReliaFund button on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. And I put it there for clients, and I had ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com build that specifically for me. ReliaFund is a payment processor that's been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. Now, that's an advertising slogan, but the fact is that what they do is integrate their systems with your systems seamlessly. So if you are doing business and you're developing back office systems, if you are having someone develop a new website for you, you want to talk to ReliaFund about payment processing solutions to work in unison with all of those systems. No long-term contracts. They're secure and technology-focused. If you call them, you will talk to a human being, Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry, 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. Or you can check them out online at ReliaFund.com, ReliaFund.com. Or you can click on the ReliaFund banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, and it takes you to their customer interface, and you can tell them what you're doing. That's how I found those guys. ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com. Heading into 2020, which is, of course, a presidential election year, I do not like to cover politics the same way that everyone else does, where we pick these issues that are flashpoint issues and we wax poetic about them. We try to convince people of our idea about a particular issue. Name your issue. I don't need to name the issue. Or it turns out to be some huge thing going on in politics today. And the tendency is to tell people what's going to happen, tell people how people are thinking, and by extension, to tell people, meaning listeners and subscribers, viewers, and so forth, how they are supposed to think. And I just detest that kind of approach to quote-unquote journalism or opinion, even commentary. It's much better to kind of try to highlight an idea. Now, I've been thinking over the holidays about this concept of political populism. Don't worry, I'm going to define populism in a second. What I'm trying to do here is whenever I kind of come across these things that pop into my head, organically. I like to try to develop podcasts about them because I think they reflect on my thinking about politics in the United States. And I think also that there are things, it's something to think about going forward when you're in the maelstrom, and that is the term, it's a maelstrom of a storm of reactive political opinion about what somebody said or did today or whatever a tweet was or some action that someone took. And I'm not going to comment about those things, particularly what's going on in Washington, D.C., because what we have to do is wait for outcomes and talk about those things. So in this podcast, we're going to talk about populism, and we're going to talk about populism as a political tactic and how it is ruining American politics and really putting us on the road to political oblivion. Best way to describe that would be the road to becoming literally a banana republic. We usually associate these kinds of tactics and populism with quote-unquote less developed democracies or republics in Latin America or Eastern Europe, where they don't quite have it together. And we like to think that we are the ones that kind of wrote the book on all of this. And we seem to be suffering from the same sorts of political the virus of populism in the United States. So we're going to talk about it in this podcast. The other thing that I should mention is that today when people watch or listen to anything political, because they have been steeped in years and years and years of this split screen back and forth arguments that you are constantly seeing on CNN and Fox and MSNBC and throughout all the media, or they have been subjected to this proselytization that goes on in quote-unquote political media, that no matter what somebody says, before they even get what they have to say out of their mouth, people are coming up with an argument against what they have to say. So we don't listen to each other. We are too busy formulating arguments so that we can win the argument, supposedly, that there's going to be an argument and we're going to win, instead of saying, let's have an exchange of ideas and let's not worry about winning the argument. So I'm sure that you can punch holes in what I have to say, and I'm sure people will try to avoid that. Try to just set aside this tendency to develop arguments and just listen, and then kind of think about that, and let that be part of what you think about when you see what's going on in the world politically. All right, I don't need to go into it. And this is, by the way, this isn't a completely formed theory or anything else. It's just I see populism in both political parties as really forming the basis of those parties' approaches to what they want to do. And my perception of populism is that it's a tactic. First of all, it isn't a political party. It's not a cohesive ideology other than just giving people what they want, which is kind of a loose definition of what populism is. But the actual, there's several definitions available on the internet, but basically it is a political approach or tactic that strives to appeal to ordinary people who feel that their concerns are disregarded by established elite groups. So that's one of the political definitions of populism. And both political parties practice populism today. In the Democratic Party, which is often referred to as the liberals, and I'm going to get to that in a second, healthcare plans, free education, universal basic income, fixing the problems caused by the unrestrained capitalism of the United States. On the Republican side, it's trade protection approaches that supposedly benefit the worker and the farmer. It is this idea that we are battling the so-called deep state, these bureaucrats in Washington that need to be called to heel. And populism on the right also is decidedly nationalist. Make America great again, for example. The frustrations people feel lead politicians to follow public opinion, and it's not the other way around. You know, people say, well, you've got to be a leader if you're going to be a politician. Politicians are not leaders. They are followers. They follow the trends of public opinion as far as they can discern it. So the roots of populism in the United States starts before World War I. During a farming depression in the late 1800s, as well as an industrial boom, the farmers at that time were the classic little guys. Even the sort of protozoic workers, you know, those people that were working in industry while they were also little guys, the farmers really were at the top of the food chain when it came to little guys. And at that time, William Jennings Bryan, who had been, among other things, Woodrow Wilson's first Secretary of State, became the first candidate of the New Democrats, which was a coalition of conservative big city Democrats, immigrant groups, poor farmers, and laborers in the Midwest and South, the first populists. In those days, Republicans were for homesteads, high tariffs, national banks and railroads, social spendings, and they were also progressive socially, they wanted to use the government to end the scourge of alcohol, and they also wanted to use government to reform or right other public wrongs. During the late 1800s, the U.S. political system was coalescing politically still after the collapse of the Whig Party in the 1850s and late 1850s and the emergence of the Republican Party in the 1860 election, and of course, after the Civil War. And I think if there's a period of American history more like our own right now, it is this period of time, the Gilded Age, when populism became a force in American politics. Republicans, especially these days, like to talk about the U.S. Constitution. They like to talk about the Foundation period. But I would say that the trends in political thought are more like this period in the late 1890s, again, at the end of the so-called Gilded Age. Today, the terms conservative and liberal are used to describe our current party system, and I feel that they are completely inadequate for the description of our politics, because today, both political parties are neither conservative nor liberal. Both political parties are populist, and that is why we might just be headed down the road to political oblivion. Remember that populism doesn't seem to have a cohesive ideology. I've often described it as a tactic, not a political ideology. It essentially is this idea of just give the people, whoever the people you're talking to are, what they want. And I'm going to talk about how this plays out and what we might be headed for because of this in the second half of this podcast. Well, one of the things that's going to happen soon is we're going to head into the deep freeze. And if you have problems with plumbing or heating, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. More about Ryan later on in the podcast. And because it's the holidays, I know you had people in your house. I did. And we sat around looking at the house and talking about what needs to be done. And a lot of people think, well, you know, we had a long conversation this holiday season about redoing the garage so that I could watch the Viking games out there, or fixing up the basement to get the kids out of the top part of the house and our hair down into the basement, or any other thing that you want to do. You need a builder who's going to be by your side from start to finish and somebody who does great work. And I'm going to refer you to Whitetail Builders of Andover, Minnesota. Randy Grabo is amazing. They do great work. The people that have used them that I know are really happy with what they do. 612-282-8801. 612-282-8801. Randy loves talking about these projects. And if you're going to do an addition, you need to have some strategic planning. They've got videos of the work they've done and lots of pictures of what they've done online at whitetailbuildersinc.com. Or you can click on the Whitetail banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Whitetail Builders, helping you construct your dreams, and you're going to love the results. Now, one of the things that comes up with populism is trade protection. One of the things that comes up with populism is foreign manufacturing. But the fact is, companies are looking for American manufacturing. If this is you, remember Depot Star, D-E-P-O-T, Depot Star, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit them online at depotstar.com. Academics have a term to describe the political parties in any given era. It's called the party system. This this thing going on in the late 1800s that I talked about at the beginning of the podcast is the third party, the development and the emergence of the third party system. Aside from my belief that the American political parties are breaking down in terms of their relevance, voters seem to be excited by populism on both sides of the very much binary description of the American political system as being right or left. On the left, populism emerges, as I said, in terms of helping the little guy by forgiving student loans, health insurance, universal basic income, among other things. And right-wing populism is all about getting China off our back, saving jobs and income of the American worker, the farmer, being proud of the flag and the sacrosanct military, and of course, this concept of nationalism. When we go back and we look at the founders of this country. They certainly could have adopted an American system based on the British parliamentary system. In fact, that was the colonial system. But instead, they chose a classical type of government with a system of checks and balances, fashioning a single executive which was decidedly weak. And at that time, the political party system was anti-federalists and federalists. So there were people who wanted a strong central government and people who did not believe that a strong central government was such a good idea. Those are really constitutional arguments. And today, we're not having these kinds of constitutional arguments. We're fighting over which party can best run this government that is now very strong. We're not arguing about whether the government is too strong anymore. It doesn't matter if you're a Republican or Democrat. It's all about who's going to do a better job draining the swamp, so to speak. Our government today controls the means of production with various regulations and agencies. So when you hear that we're a capitalist country, and you're going to have to stay with me on this, really what we are is a regulated market economy. That's a little different from raw capitalism. So if you have a regulated market economy and all the power is essentially beginning to be pooled in the executive branch, then what you end up with is the potential for a few further steps. And one of those is an authoritarian individual or party that circumvents the political system and uses the regulatory apparatus that already controls the economy to increase their control and to focus their control of the economy on a single goal. And it really doesn't matter which political party is in charge. You hear Republicans talk a lot about socialism, and you hear a lot of Democrats talk about fascism. But essentially, this kind of indirect control of the government headed by a political system or political ideology that's decidedly populist is kind of fascist. It's not even oligarchical. It certainly isn't capitalist. One thing about reading history is that it tends to roll out like a scroll. One thing naturally leads to the next, and it all fits together, right? The historian has the benefit of hindsight. She knows how the story's going to end, and so she puts together a narrative based on the evidence available to support the theory about what happened or to explain why something happened. When history is being made, we rarely understand that, have that kind of clarity or work with that kind of clarity in the moment of the outcome. The outcome at that point becomes news. And then after the outcome, people say everything makes sense, and especially after the history is written. A good example is the recession of 2008. You know, we all know what happened. It's a great example because we lived through it. The housing crisis supposedly caused by subprime mortgages. Nobody knew about that. And so when people started talking about subprime mortgages, people didn't believe it. Now, there were some people in the markets who went down and looked into those tranches that contained the subprime mortgages with the prime mortgages and questioned the bond ratings. They did their due diligence. They sounded the alarm. And what happened? Nobody believed them. So if you go back to the summer of 2007, the winter of 2008, and even the early summer of 2008, nobody believed people that were saying the subprime thing. Nothing to see here, folks. And so what they ended up doing was either getting out of the market, shorting the market, or figuring out what they were going to do with their money so that they could profit from the breakdown. And at that time, we were consistently told there was nothing to worry about. You look at 9/11, and anyone could have seen that 9/11 was going to happen, but no one did. Especially, the people that supposedly were in charge of that sort of thing. If that's not good enough for you, let's look at Pearl Harbor. There were peace marches in New York City in the summer of 1941. And after the Japanese attack, people say, anyone could have seen that was going to happen. But the thing is, nobody did. They didn't predict it. You had an obstinate and obtuse U.S. Navy that just simply didn't believe that they would do that. Bad things happen when the smartest, most experienced, most lettered people in the room cannot see the iceberg ahead. Things happen Because why? Nobody ever did anything like that before. This ship will never sink no matter what happens. There will always be people who study these things in detail before the fact, and they'll say often, this isn't working, we have to be worried about this, this is a problem, and the fact is, nobody listens to them. Finally, my goal, basically, in all of this, going back to early 2016, when I was covering the caucuses in Iowa, and I'm getting ready to go back down there to cover the Democrats because that's where the energy is. And really, I guess I would say before that, my goal was to transcend the day-to-day arguments of politics and not to get sucked in to the arguments and the machinations of emotional participants, but especially the cynical operators who use those emotional attachments and arguments and so forth to get ahead. And I have to go back to the financial crisis in 2008 again, or invading Iraq in 2003, or 9/11. The bottom line is the American people were lied to again and again and again. And if you disagree with that, look at Vietnam. They were lied to again and again, plain and simple. People lost their sons. People lost their fortunes. People, you know, lost their jobs and so on. And all this, during all this period of time, they were flat out lied to. Politicians and people in our government make plans and do things that are sanctioned by official power and are supported by people who believe they are right. And that translates to political support. And then bad things happen. It's not what those in charge thought was going to happen when it happens. And then they really don't know what to do. And there are many, many examples. One of the best domestic mistakes that I believe that progressivism is responsible for, but also populism, is this idea of prohibition. And then all of these other things that have happened as the result of populism as well, trade policy and so forth. You can go through the entire history of the things that have been done to quote unquote make things better. But really what it has done, it has made the government more and more and more powerful. The establishment of the Federal Reserve, and particularly when it comes to the economy, this regulatory regime that currently is controlled generally by the executive branch. And even worse, when it is given the imprint of officiality through legislation in Congress, governments make things happen. And on the ride up to the result, there is a confidence curve and people feel good. Well, we fixed that problem. We've got this bill and we fixed this taxation issue and everything's going to be great. We've got this bill and they're going to spend all this money and our infrastructure is going to get fixed and life is going to be great and the sun is rising on America and this is great and I'm going to vote for that guy because he fixed all this stuff. But the fact is, it doesn't matter what you and I think is going to happen. It is rarely that neat and not what happens. Every time they do something, they cause a problem that they then have to fix. The lesson is governments and human beings make mistakes, and we are fallible beings at best. And the bottom line is, as a country, and this is what I think, when you cede too much power to the government, well, you never get it back. We're never going to get rid of the Federal Reserve, even though people run around saying that we've got to get rid of the Federal Reserve. That's never going to happen when you've got politicians running around talking about China taking our jobs or giving people universal basic incomes or printing money to save the housing market. Doesn't matter what it is. The bottom line is when you cede power to governments, you never get it back. If we as voters cannot think beyond our nose, we have to hope the electorate is smarter than the individual. And I wonder whether we actually are. Unfortunately, there's plenty of examples of voters voting against their own interests, especially when it comes to populism. How did we get here? Well, you know, you had aristocrats who were tired of paying taxes, among other things, and they created a government that wasn't supposed to work. They designed a government for their benefit, which was they didn't want a government being up in their business. Since then, politicians have become obsessed with the little guy because that is where their bread is buttered. The workers, the farmers, the middle class, you name it. They don't ever – and why? Because we don't like elites. We don't like billionaires. We don't – you know, it's all about class warfare or some sort of other kind of cultural warfare that we're constantly being, you know, hectored about. The result is a government with too much influence. And I have said and said and said that this is the basis of my beliefs today. I think the government is way too powerful and it causes more problems than it solves. Because what it does is it grows its own influence. And one of the things it does is it sends out money to people that it doesn't have. So the federal government is building a latticework of public-private partnerships that is basically redistributionist. So the government collects taxes and they borrow money and they put that money out through the banking system. And they then spread that money out through these public-private partnerships across the country. And that is how they control one of the ways that they control the economy, which was never intended by the foundation of the country. That is not part of capitalism. The government funding projects through income redistribution is not capitalist. It's something else. And usually the political tool for getting those things passed is, in fact, populist. Oh, we've got to help these people who are workers. We've got to help these farmers by chain. We've got to go out and make these agreements, these trade agreements to save these farmers or to save this industry. We've got to have a steel tariff to save this industry. And if it doesn't work, well, then we're just going to pass some other law or do some other regulation as president to fix a certain kind of problem. And of course, when it works for an individual, they see it as positive when it does what they want it to do, whoever they are. So if you're a farmer and they do something to help farmers, well, you're all for them. I don't see anyone in politics saying government poses the greatest threat to the individual today. Our fight today is who's going to run the government better. And most of the time, they don't. We've had a series of very bad presidents in this country. And I'm not going to practice politics as usual. They all say that. And they all say it. And it's really irritating to me because the fact is politics as usual is the job. Policy errors create the problems. And we seesaw back and forth between solutions that are more problems. And I'm going to say this because I think it's really important, and I'm pointing out this, you know, the tactic is populism. The tactic is I am for the little guy, and the result is egregious policy mistakes that are transmitted to the people through a very large, powerful, and incompetent government. And the question is naturally, well, how do we solve this problem? I don't think it does get solved. I think this is a problem, a modern problem that has to run its course, even if that course is the road to oblivion. Yeah, earlier I was talking about Ryan Plumbing and Heating because if you have problems with your plumbing this time of the year, and this is when it happens, plumbing heating issues are big this time of the year. When it comes to keeping these systems running right, you have to have people that know what they're doing. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems is what Ryan Plumbing does. They also do stuff like in-floor heat and so forth. If you're going to be building, if you're going to be adding something on, you want to talk to Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul because you want reliable service inside St. Paul, you call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in Frogtown, in St. Paul, metro-wide from St. Paul to the rest of Minneapolis and St. Paul. So wherever you are, remember Ryan Plumbing at ryanplumbing.com, 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Got to say it. I say it every podcast. I hate my printer. And the reason I hate it is because I hate paying for print cartridges. There is a better way. That is Cartridge World in Maple Grove. They can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores. They are guaranteed to have cartridges that perform as good as new, and they do. Free delivery on qualifying orders. And if you qualify, they can actually get you a printer. And that is a hell of a deal. Cartridge World, 763-420-6632, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. So this is the theme that I'll be returning to as I head down to Iowa. It is a theme that I'll be returning to throughout the year as I kind of talk about the 2020 election. I'm going to do it differently than I've ever done it before because I'm not going to be talking about every day's little battle. I'm going to be waiting for outcomes. And there's going to be a lot of little battles on the campaign trail and very little outcomes. So be prepared for that. Thanks for listening to Podcast 888, The Bob Davis Podcasts, The Road to Political Oblivion.